We're holding on Ayin Amr Aleph, fifth line. Continuing on this discussion of remedies that we've been doing last block and a little bit of block and a half or so. So the Gemara continues. Omar Shmuel, hay man de mochule ba'alunchi de parsoi. If a person was struck with a Persian spear, and Rashi explains the Persians, when they made their spears in the first place, and they're made out of iron, of course, we talked about yesterday how a blacksmith, after he makes an iron tool, he quenches it in water. So they would quench it in water that had poison mixed into it. So therefore, so the iron of the spear would absorb some poison. They dip them in poison afterwards. Whatever. The point is that now, so these arrows are not only dangerous in and of themselves because of the when they pierce a person's body, but they also inject poison in as well. So a person who's struck by such a thing, michya loichoyi, he's not going to survive it. But ad hochi vahochi, but meanwhile, until he actually dies, there is something where they can at least do to revive him enough. Nisbole bisra shmena agumri v'cham rachaya, let them give him fat meat roasted on the coals and undiluted wine, and that way at least efshu d'chaya purta, that way at least he'll live a little longer than he would have, omfakad abese, and that way he'll have time to give last instructions to his household. So that'll at least delay his passing by a little bit, so that he'll be able to take care of such things. Similarly, the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Idi bar Oven, Hay man de boli zibura." If a person swallows a zibura, which is a wasp, same thing. He's not going to survive. But meanwhile, in order to delay things a little bit, they should give him to drink a revius of strong vinegar. And the same thing, this way he may live a little longer than he otherwise would have, and he'll be able to give instructions to his household. Continues the Gemara. If a person eats beef together with turnips, and he sleeps outside under them, and he sleeps outside under the moonlight, on the 14th or 15th night of Tkufas Tammuz. So you have all of those factors together. There's beef, there's turnips, he sleeps outdoors under the moonlight, and it's on the 14th or 15th night of Tkufas Tammuz. So Tkufas Tammuz is the official beginning of the summer. Depending, let's say, for example, if we go according to Shmuel's Tkufa, which is usually what's printed in the calendars, for example, then Shmuel's Tkufa comes out generally around July 8th every year. So then this would mean he does this on July 22nd or 23rd. If we say you go according to the actual astronomical Tkufa, which is nowadays about 2.5 weeks earlier, June 21st, then you're talking 14 or 15 days after that. Anyway, if a person does all those things together, achazatu achilu, then he gets seized by achilu, which the Gemara is going to describe soon what that is. Tana, now we learn in a braisa, not only that, also, v'amamalik kresim, we call dover, when a person fills up his stomach with any kind of food, instead of, as we're going to learn soon, that a person should not, he should not eat until his stomach is completely full. So if a person does, also achazatu achilu, then also he gets seized by achilu. And Omar Papa filu mitamri, and Rapapa says, you should know, that means even if the person overeats on dates. So they want to ask Pshita, obviously, why should dates be different than any other kind of food? And the answer is Sakrat Chamina. You would have thought, without Rapapa telling us, Hoyov Omamar, since we learn in a Braisa, we learned this in Ksubas, Tamri Misabon, dates have a lot of good properties. They fill a person up. Omashachnon, they warm up his body. Omashalshalon, they make his bowels loose, so he's not constipated. Omashron, and they strengthen a person, and they don't make a person spoiled, as in other words, like a person, even though they're sweet. The point is, Rashi says, a person who eats dates is not going to end up being the kind of person who's therefore always going to want to eat sweet foods. He'll eat whatever, he won't be so finicky like that. So dates have a lot of those good qualities. So therefore, emalo, you would think maybe it's not a problem if a person overeats on dates. Kamash malan, therefore, the papa tells us that even dates, you still have that same problem. Okay, my achilu, what exactly is this achilu that we're saying that a person might get as a result of these various kinds of eating? Amar Rabbi Elazar, esh shalat somers. So Rabbi Elazar says it means a fire of the bones. My esh shalat somers. Amar Rabbi, esh garmi. It means esh garmi, which is the translation of the same thing in Aramaic, but apparently the idea is that the name of it, the name of this condition, was better known under its Aramaic name than under the equivalent Hebrew name. So it's some kind of thing where a person feels a burning and a fire in his bones. Some kind of like very hot fever. So my asvase, what is the remedy for it? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaya, Omrali Aim. So Abaya says, my mother told me, whereas we've learned before, that means his foster mother, actually. First of all, she told him, as background, Kulo Shakyani, all kinds of medicinal drinks, when a person is sick, and he needs to take out, and he needs to take some kind of medicine. Tloss of a shiva or tresar. Sometimes you have ones where you have to take them for 3 days straight. Some of them 7 days, some of them 12 days. Vahai, but here, when a person is suffering from achilu, and they need to take medicine for it, which we're going to describe in a minute what the medicine is, ad demitasi, he has to continue taking it until he's cured, no matter how long it is. Another difference, kulo shakyoni al libere kona. Another difference is all other medicinal drinks you have to take on an empty stomach. Vahai, the remedy for achilu, basa de ochel b'shosi va'ayla b'sakise, then no, a person should take it only after he ate and drank and went into the bathroom, the nafik, and comes out and moshi yode and washed his hands after going to the bathroom, and then he'll be ready to take this medication. So what is the medication? They bring him a fistful of sisa made from lentils. Sisa, Rashi brings from various other places in Shas. We find that it's a drink. It's a food or a drink that they used to make out of flour and salt mixed with some kind of liquid. Sometimes the Gemara mentions in some other places that often they would use vinegar. So here we're talking about you use lentil flour mixed with salt and mixed with vinegar, and that's called shisa of lentils. So you take a handful of that, obuna de chamra atika, and a handful, a fistful, whatever, of old wine, vinigbalinu bahadi adodi, knead those two ingredients together, the nechel, and then he should eat from it. Vinichruch bisdine vinigne, then he should wrap himself in a blanket and go to sleep. The leket de nekme ad dekoy menafshe. Nobody should wake him up until he wakes up on his own. Ki koy, and when he finally gets up, lishkalev sedine mine. Then they should take away the blanket from him. The iloy, and if not, hoduri lave. Then the illness will return to him. In short, the idea, as Rashi mentions, by wrapping him in blankets, the idea is you want to heat him up so he'll sweat. So therefore, I guess the idea is afterwards the blankets are soaked through with the sweat, and if he sleeps in those blankets afterwards, then the germs that he sweated out may come right back to him. But that's the remedy. Okay. The Gemara continues. So now here the Gemara is not going to really be dealing further with remedies. Rather, the Gemara is going to be dealing now more with general health advice. So Amalei the Yohu Lerabnasan, Echil Shlish or Sei Shlish, eat one third of your eating. In other words, when you're eating, fill up your stomach one third with food, or seishlish, drink one third, fill up the second third with drink, which Tosfos points out elsewhere doesn't literally mean one third and one third. In fact, the Gemara in Nida implies that you should be eating a little more than you're drinking. So it doesn't necessarily mean exact thirds. The main point is that Eliyahu is getting at is v'hanach shlish, leave one third of your stomach empty. Don't eat and drink until your stomach is completely full. L'chshetichos, this way, if you get angry, talmid amiluach, then your stomach will end up being full, because when a person gets angry, their stomach shrinks. So now if a person has eaten his full stomach full and now he gets angry, then his stomach could, it's overfilled, it could burst now. So therefore, so therefore by leaving that one third empty, that leaves room for it. So that leaves room for the stomach to contract if necessary. Continues the Gemara, Tani Rav Chiya, Haroitza Shelo Yovi Lidei Chole Me'ayim. If a person wants to not become, not get stomach aches, Yehei Rogu B'tibo Kaitz V'Chorev. He should be in the habit of dipping his food in vinegar and wine, or it actually brings in vinegar, which the Gemara mentions elsewhere is very good for you, especially during the summer. Or in wine, so probably dip bread in wine or whatever. A person should get used to doing that. Kayitz v'chodef, both during the summer and during the winter. And he continues. Another thing you should be aware of: sodoscha shahana oscha mimcha. When you're enjoying a meal, when you're enjoying the food at a meal, mishoich yodcha himecha himena. Pull your hand back from it. In other words, still control yourself and don't overfill yourself. Even though the food is very good, don't eat too much of it. And another one, don't hold yourself back when you need to go to the bathroom. So when you need to go, then go right away. All of these things are necessary for your health. In fact, elsewhere, the Gemara explains that there's also dinim involved. If a person holds himself back when he's supposed to go to the bathroom, then the Gemara elsewhere brings from this week's parasha, and other such things. Although, the Ritva explains that those are all really an asmachta, but the point is that you have halachas involved over there. If a person holds himself back when he has to go to the bathroom, there are issues over there as far as being able to daven or learn or whatever. But here we're talking about from the point of view of health benefits, you need to go as soon as possible. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omar Ma'ukva. If a person drinks white tilya, which is Rashi describes it's a very bad inferior kind of wine, he will be seized with vitek. Rashi explains that vitek means weakness. The oruch relates it the rare Greek word phthisis or something like that. That means tuberculosis. It was even borrowed into English and it used to be used in older medical literature. So here he says it means the same thing, vitek, related to phthisis. So it means tuberculosis. So here Ma'okra is saying a person gets it from Rashi is saying weakness from drinking this bad quality white wine. Omer Rav Chista, shitin minecham rahavu, and Rav Chista says, you should know there are 60 kinds of wine. Malya de kolu sumko rechasana, the best of all of them is fragrant red wine. Gria de kolu tilya chibra, and the worst out of all of them is this white tilya. Continues the Gemara, Omer Rav Yehuda, here's other things that can cause a person to have vitik. Omer Rav Yehuda, I'm Haiman de Yosef. But Safrone Nissen Gabi Nura, if a person sits on a morning in Nissen, so Nissen time, it's starting at the beginning of spring, it's still cold outside, but it's starting to warm up. So if a person sits at that time in the mornings doing Nissen, Gabi Nura, by the fire, Vishayef Mishcha, and he rubs oil on his skin, Vinofik Vyosef Vishimsha, and then he goes out and sits in the sun, Achazte vitek, and also that can cause him to get seized by vitek. I guess the shock between the hot fire and the oil, which is warming up his body, and then he goes out into the sun where it's much cooler outside. Maybe we're saying that that's the problem. And another one, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, Hik is dam b'shimish mitasei. If a person lets blood and then has relations, Havyan le'bonim vitkin, then the children who are going to be born are going to be vitkin, where again, according to Rashi, they're going to be weak, and according to the Aruch, they'll be prone to tuberculosis. Hik is ushneim b'shimshu, if that's if the husband alone does bloodletting before he goes to the bath, before he and his wife have relations. If both of them do bloodletting, and then they have relations. Havilan bonim bali rasan. Then they're going to have children who are subject to rasan. We learned back in Ksubas about rasan. It's a disease that makes a person. We said the person has a constant flow from his nose and his mouth, and flies always following him. And ultimately, we learned in the Gemara over there, it's traceable to there's a bug sitting in his brain where the Gemara gave a whole remedy over there of how to cut open his skull and take out the bug. But the point is that's rasa. And the Gemara mentions over there, it's a very dangerous, contagious disease. It also causes skin eruptions and whatever. So now the children are susceptible to that because the parents did bloodletting and then both of them and then had relations. However, a papa says that would only be if they didn't eat something after the bloodletting before having relations. But if they ate something, if they tasted something in between, then there's no problem with it. Then the bloodletting before having relations is not harmful to the children. Continues the Gemara. Here's another one. If a person came right back from a trip and immediately has relations without resting up first, then also having like bonim viskin, then also the children will be susceptible to vitik, to this weakness, according to Rashi, or tuberculosis, according to the Aruch. The basic idea we seem to be saying is that anything that makes a person very weak then is going to have an effect on the children that are conceived from relations that he has right afterwards. Bloodletting weakens a person. So we said, if he eats something in between, then that helps restore his body's strength. And the same way we're talking about over here, when the person comes back from a trip and immediately has relations, so he's much weaker than he would usually be at the time. So therefore that has an effect on the children and makes them weak. Continues the Gemara. Here's another thing that a person should be careful not to do right before having relations. When a person comes back from the bathroom, he shouldn't have relations until he waits the time it takes to walk a half a mil. So a mil takes between 18 and 24 minutes to walk, depending on the various poskim. So this would be between 9 and 12 minutes. He should wait. Because what happens is when a person first comes out of the bathroom, the shed of the bathroom comes along with him. You find in different places in the Gemara, shedim would tend to hang out. Keep in mind, of course, bathrooms in those days was basically a place in the field where a person would go to the bathroom. So that's the kind of place shedim like to hang out over there. And now the shed follows him and therefore wants to get involved when he's having relations. The im shimish, if a person does that, having like bonim nichbim, then I'll have children who are subject to who are susceptible to epilepsy. A lot of these things are brought in Shulchan Aruch and the Nosa Kalim as things to be careful about, that a couple should be careful about before they have relations. Here we're mentioning as far as Shadim of the Besakissa as well. I mean, you have Bechlal, the Zoyar points out that Shadim, Kirchas Atoma, and whatever are very interested in the wasted drops that come about when a husband and wife have relations. And that's why you have in the Siddur before Hamapil, you have the short paragraph over there beginning at Kiatifa Bekitfa, basically telling the Kirchas Atoma to get out of here and don't try to be involved. So all of this preposterous relates to that sort of thing. Continues the Gemara, Tanan Abanan, Hamashamish Mitosim Umud, if a couple has relations standing, Oichazte Avis, then they're going to be seized by Avis. Rashi translates it as cramps. And in other places, Rashi explains that it's something that it means that makes a person like shudder and wobble and then whatever. So that's if they do it standing. Miyushav, if they do it sitting, Oichazte Delaria. Then they're going to be seized by delaria. The Gemara doesn't describe over here, and neither does Rashi what delaria is. But whatever it is, it's something apparently you don't want to have. Actually, a goes for tzionim brings from the Aruch that it means that the word is actually not delaria with a dalad, but alaria with an aleph, and then it means something that makes him have to yawn a lot. Anyway, So the Gemara says actually my delaria. So what is my delaria? What is the remedy for delaria? And it's interesting. Usually when the Gemara asks my whatever, it means what is it? But here the Gemara seems to be asking what is the Gemara is skipping like what it actually is and saying and going straight to what the remedy for it is. So my delaria, Omer Rabbi Shlomo ben Levi, sam delaria daudara. The remedy for delaria is daudara. So in Bavel they didn't know what that meant. My delaria, my daudara. Amar Abaya, murika dechoichi. Murika is saffron that grows on choichi, that grows on that grows on a thorn bush. So you take that. So saffron that grows among or on thorn bushes, you take some of that. So the Gemara says, Rapapa olis sabolalei, when Rapapa was suffering from delaria, whatever it is, he would take some of the saffron and chew it and swallow it. Rapapi alis v'shodi lei, and Rapapa would chew it and then spit it out. Either way, I guess the idea is just the chewing it alone helps the person. So you have the different amiroyim who figured that swallowing it will also improve things, and the other one says it's not necessary. The Gemara continues. Amar Abaya, Misha ain't a boki b'derech eretz. If a person is not familiar with derech eretz, sometimes the Gemara uses derech eretz as a euphemism for tashmish. So here, what it means is, Rashi says he doesn't have the strength for tashmish. Leisi gimo kapizi kut midchoyfi. He should take three kapizi, which is a kapiza is a measurement. The Gemara mentions in other places is equivalent to to three logim, which is three quarters. So there are four logim to a calf. So a kapiza is a kapiza then is three quarters of a calf. So you should take three kapiza of kurtmi dechoichi of kurtmi, which again means kurtmi is also saffron, and dechoichi. Now before we had dechoichi meant that it grew among the thorns, but here Rashi explains actually that it means Rashi says it means that it grows in land that's fertilized with sheep droppings. So apparently there is another girsa that the Aruch brings where the word over here is not dechoichi but rather dechori, where chori means excrement. So in that case, then that apparently Rashi has the same girsa, and that's where he gets it from. So you take saffron that grew in a field like that was fertilized with sheep droppings, vinidrukinu, and grind them up, vinishlakinu b'chamra, and then cook them in wine, vinishti, and then you should drink from that mixture. And in fact, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, hein hein echzeruni v'narusi. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan says, I tried that, and it restored me to my youth. It made me able to engage in tashmish again. So now the Gemara continues with some lists of things that are good or that are not so good for your health. There were three things that weaken a person's body. Matizin literally means like chop off. So like they chop off or they weaken his strength. On the side of it, here it brings that the another gear sense that matizin matishin, which means they weaken. Anyway, the Elohim, Ocham Omer, if a person eats standing, the Shasim Omer, or he drinks standing, the Shemesh Mitchasim Omer, or if he has relations standing. So before we talk about having relations standing that can cause a person to develop cramps or tremors or something like that, here we're saying that it weakens a person's whole body, and so does also eating and drinking standing. Next, Hamisha Kraven Lamisa Yosman Achayim. There are five kind of things. If a person does them, he's closer to death than to living. The Elohein, Ochal V'Omad. If a person eats and right away stands up, Shasa V'Omad. If he drinks and right away stands up before, in other words, it actually says he should wait a little bit. He should wait a little bit before standing up. And he, oh, you know what? I skipped a couple of lines. Sorry. So let's go back. There are three things that weaken a person's strength. The Elohim, pachad, derech, v'ovayn. Fear of the road, meaning traveling on the road, and ovayn and aveiros, Tosfos says two possibilities. It can mean the Avedis themselves, or it can, well, actually, Tosfos says it can mean two things. It can mean the fear of the Aveira, that the person has done an Aveira and now he's concerned about the consequences, or it can mean the actual punishment of it, which causes his body to become weak. And we have psukim for all of them. You have a pasuk in Tehillim, my heart is scharchar, which means surrounded, so like surrounded by worry. Azvani choichi, and my strength has left me. So we see that when a person is beset by worry, then it weakens his body. Derech, dichtiv ina baderech koichi, another pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem afflicted my strength on the road. So we see that traveling on the road weakens a person. And avon, dichtiv, another pasuk, koshob avoni koichi, my strength has failed because of my Averus. And again, Tosfos says it can mean because of the worry about the Averus that he did, or it can mean the actual punishment. So that's machishim koichishal adam, those weaken a person's strength. Then again, you have shloshed ramatizin gofishal adam. Then we said there are five things that actually destroy a person's strength. Matizin or whatever, which is more than machishim. The Elohim, we said, ocham umad, vashosim umad, vashimish mitasim umad, if he eats or drinks or has relations standing. And then we said, Shish Hamisha Kraven Lemisa Yosim and Achayim. There are five things. If a person does them, he's closer to death than to life. These are very dangerous things to do, in other words. The Elohim, Ochal the Omad, if he eats and right away stands up without waiting a little bit. Shosa the Omad, if he drinks and right away stands up. Hikis Dam the Omad, he has bloodletting and right away stands up. Yoshin the Omad, if he sleeps and then right away gets up. Shimish mitasiv omad, or if he has relations and right away stands up. So in each case, a person should wait a little bit before he gets up. In the case of sleeping, for example, if you don't, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, you should realize Hashem is watching you when you get out of bed right away, but you don't jump out of bed. The moment you open your eyes, if nothing else, I mean, you sit on your bed and you say Moida'ani first. And that way, at least you're not getting up the moment you woke up. Next, shisha oisa oisin miyad mes. There are six things. If a person does them, he's immediately going to die because they weaken his body so much. If a person came home from a trip, from a long walking trip, and then he exerted himself, like he did exercise. Then hikis dam, and he had blood let. The nichnas the beis hamerchatz. And he goes into the bathhouse. The Gemara is going to explain that he does all these things one after the other. He goes into the bathhouse. The shasa, and he drinks. The shtaker, and he becomes drunk. The yoshin agabe karka, and sleeps on the ground. The shimish mitasei, and has relations. So the combination of all those things is very bad for him. So when we say that the person will right away die, is only if he does these things in this order. Abaya says it doesn't even have to be in order. It does have to be where he does them all back to back. But if he does them in order, then Abaya says it'll kill him. But if he does them out of order, cholish, then it'll make him very weak. Now Tosfos points out the previous one where we said Ochal v'Omad, where we said Ochal v'Omad, Shos v'Omad, etc. It doesn't mean that it has to be all five of them. Any one of them by itself is enough that he's craving the Missa Yosef and Achayim, because there the Gemara doesn't discuss doing all of them in order or out of order. But he was saying it has to be in this order, it'll kill a person, and out of order, Abaya says it'll weaken. So the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? Vaha Ma'uras Abdullah Avda Tras Minayumis. There was Ma'uras, the name of a woman, who had her slave do three of these things only, Umis, and that slave died. So we see that not even all six of them, even only some of them, is dangerous. The answer is Ahu Kochoshava. That slave was already weak from before. He was already weak and scrawny from before. So therefore, three of these things were enough to kill him. But a regular healthy person, it would be all of them. And only if he does them in order. Next, the Gemara continues. Shmoinu Ruban Kosho Miutan Yofa. There are eight things that too much of them is bad for you, but a little bit of them is good for you. Ve'elohen derech. The first one is walking on the road. So a little bit of walking is good for you, but too much, as we've been saying, weakens a person. The second one, v'derech eretz. The second one, again, where derech eretz is a euphemism for tashmish. The third thing, oisher, is wealth. So a little bit of it, Rashi explains, is good. But too much of it then is mevatel, a person from learning Torah, and makes him a baal gaiva. The fourth one, malacha, and work, there's a certain amount of it is good for you, but not too much. Yayin, wine, v'shena, and sleeping. Chamin, bathing in and drinking hot water. V'hakozestam, and bloodletting. So all those things are good in moderation. Bechlal, you know, that Rambam talks about in Hilchos Deis quite a bit, the idea that a person in general should be exercising moderation in everything that he does, as far as his midos and as far as his diet and as far as his activities and all in general, that Rambam writes over there that moderation is the key to health. Now, here we're saying eight specific things where that applies. Next, Shmoinim Amatimus Hazera, there are eight things that reduce the amount of zera that a man will produce. So they make him less fertile than he otherwise would have been. Ve'elohen hamelach, salt, v'harav, and famine or hunger, and nesek, which is a type of tsaras, and in Parshas Tazria, when it talks about tsaras, so in particular, it mentions nesek as a type of tsaras that attacks hairy areas of the body, the scalp or the beard, and makes some of the hair fall out. Also bechia, crying, v'shena al gabi kaka, sleeping directly on the ground, v'gadgedonius, and gadgedonius. Now Rashi over here translates it as coriander. So you have the seeds are called in English, the seeds are called coriander, and the leaves that are sometimes also used as a spice are called cilantro. So that's what it is. There are different other explanations. Another explanation is that it's a type of clover. In later Sfarim, sometimes in Shulchan Aruch, for example, you can find the word gadgedonius used to mean cherries. So maybe it means that over here also. Anyway, kshus b'shaloi b'zmana, and kshus, which is hops, which are used in making beer, out of season. Then it's we're saying it's mematimus azera. It reduces a person's fertility. V'akozas dam lamata kiflayim, and double as harmful of all of those is letting blood on the lower half of the body. And tonne, we learn in a braisa. As far as the kshus shaloi bismana, the Gemara will describe soon what's bismana and what's shaloi bismana. So tonne, kishem shakosha lamata kiflayim, just as much as bloodletting in the lower half of the body is doubly as bad for you as these things that we mentioned. Kach yofa lamayla kiflayim, the same way, letting it on a higher part of the body is double as good as doing it anywhere else. So Amar Papa. So the Papa says, what's the definition of lamaila and lamata? Lamata means lamata min abetzim, means when he does it lower down on the body than the beitzim. So for example, he does it on his, he has the bloodletting done on his legs or his feet. And lamaila yofa kiflayim, and lamaila, when we say that above, it's double, it's twice as good for you, means lamaila min abeitzim, means any part of the body that is above the beitzim. So for example, Rashi says it can be the shoulders, the neck, the hip bone, all of those things. Then bloodletting is double as good for you as it would be below. So the Gemara is not saying actually where it's exactly that. So you're saying double as good or double as bad. The Gemara is not saying where it's actually exactly one time as good. Maybe right in that area. Maybe in the beitzim themselves. I don't know. Anyway, we said that's bad for a person's zera, that reduces a person's zera. We said kshus shaloi bismana. So what is shaloi bismana? And again, tonne, we learn in a braisa, kishem shakosha shaloi bismana. Just as kshus is bad for you when you eat it out of season, kach yofa bismana, the same way it's good. The same way it's good for you when you eat it in season. So what is in season and out of season? Amar Papa, Zmana Tamuz, the season for Kshus is Tamuz, Shaloi Bizmana Tevis, out of season would be if you eat it during Tevis. As far as Yom and Nisan, Vieva Tishrei, Nisan and Tishrei time, this is spring and the fall, Loi Malu, Vilei Koshu, it's not good for you, but it won't hurt you either. Okay. So that ends the discussion of health matters in the Gemara, which again we got into it by way of the Mishnah had told us Misha Ochze Kurdiyokus back on some Zion Amud Beis that a person was seized by Kurdiyokus from drinking too much newly pressed wine. We said so the Gemara had mentioned a remedy for it, so that led the Gemara to digress into talking about all these other remedies. Where again, as Marashah said, it's all part of Torah Shabbat Peh, this way it wouldn't be forgotten. And it teaches us that the great chokhmah that Chazal had, that they knew even all these kinds of medical things. Okay, so now getting back to halachic matters. We said in the Mishnah, Oma kisvu get me ishti. So first of all, the first part of the Mishnah had said that if a person, when he's suffering from kurdiyakos, says, write a get for my wife, then we said it doesn't count for anything. You can't write the get because the instructions that he gave to write it are not considered valid instructions because he's not in his right mind at the time. So now the Mishnah had continued the other way around. Oma kisvu get the ishti va'ochse kurdiyakos. What happened if he said while he was healthy, write a get for my wife? Then he was seized by kurdiyakos v'chozva oma al tichtvu. And then while he's suffering from kurdiyakos, he says, don't write it. So So we said his last words don't count for anything. Now, what does that mean, doesn't count for anything? Does it mean, therefore, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now? Does it mean that we can write the get and deliver it even while he's in this condition? Or does it mean just we don't have to ask him again later on? We can still say the original instructions are valid, but nevertheless, we have to wait right now. We have to put things on hold until he gets over the kurdiyakos. So that's the machlokes. Amar of Shimon Lakish. Koisman Menoisin get the altar. You can write and deliver the get right away, even while the guy is in the throes of Kurdiyakos, because already he had given the instructions while he's healthy. And the Gemara is going to point out soon, the Shlokish takes the view. The same way, for example, if a person says, Kis will get the Ishti, and goes to sleep. So when he's asleep, his brain is not functioning. His mind is not functioning, and yet you can still write and deliver the get while he's sleeping. So the Shlokish says the same thing over here when he's attacked by Kurdiyakos. So Rabbi Yochanan Omer ein koisman elo l'chsheyishtape. However, Rabbi Yochanan says no, you can only write the get after he becomes normal again. So you have to wait until he recovers from the attack of Kurdiyakos. And only then can you write and give the get. So in fact, Tosfos points out that where is Rabbi Yochanan getting that from? Because the Mishnah had said, "Ein bedvarav achronim klum," his last words don't count for anything. Instead, the Mishnah could have just as well said, "Harelu yichtavu v'yitnu." If the Mishnah had said that when this happens, he said, "Kisvu get leishti," and by the way, when you say kisvu, we learned in the previous parak, most of the time it means he has to say tnu as well. The Mishnah is just not mentioning that particular point. But anyway. So the Mishnah says that the case he says kistvu get the ishti, and then he's seized by kurdiyakos. The Mishnah could have said koisman noisnin harele yuchtav v'yitnu, and that would mean that yes, they can do it even now when he's in the grip of kurdiyakos. But because it doesn't say that, instead it says ein bedvarav achronim klum. Then Rabbi Yochanan is medayek from that it means that you have to wait until he recovers. And all it means, means that his new instructions don't cancel out the previous instructions that he had said to give again. Also, Tosfos says, another possibility is that the Mishnah doesn't mention that you have to, that you have to test him, like it does later in the Mishnah about the case where a person became mute, implying it's not a matter of testing him, you have to wait until he recovers from the attack of kurdiyakos, and then you can write and deliver the game. So the Gemara says, my time of the Rish Lakish. So why does Rish Lakish, on the other hand, say that you could give it, you could write it and give it even while he's in the grip of kurdiyakos? So the Katani, ein bedvarav achronim klum. After all, the Mishnah says that his last words don't count for anything. So don't count for anything means we don't have to stop anything. We already were told while he was healthy that he wants us to write a get. So now we're able to continue with that even now, because what he said now, don't write it, doesn't count for anything. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan will tell you that's not what it means. Just means when he becomes clear again, when he becomes clear-headed, then we don't have to again ask him for permission to write the get. Now, if he had remained healthy the whole time and he had said first kiss will get, and afterwards he changed his mind and said don't write it, then of course they can't write it anymore. So here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying it's not that here where he said while he was suffering from kodiakos, he said, don't write it, then fine, we ignore that. But it still means, but still, they can write the get only when he becomes healthy again, and until then, they have to put things on hold. In fact, the Pnei Yeshua points out that given the giving of the get obviously has to be done when the husband is able to, has the das for it. But since the pasuk says v'kosa v'nosan, the get has to be written and given, then we see the writing also has to be taking place when the husband has das, and right now when he has kodiakos, he doesn't. So the Gemara says, b'mai kumifigi, what is the underlying machloikas? So Rish Lakish medamele the yoshin. Rish Lakish compares the person suffering from kodiakos to a person sleeping. Rabbi Yochanan medamele the shoyter. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan compares him to a shoyter. So the Gemara asks Rabbi Yochanan nami the damele yoshin. Nu, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan compare him to someone who's sleeping? And the answer is because there's a big difference. Yoshin loy mechosa maisa. A person who's sleeping, you don't need anything. Eventually, he'll wake up by himself. Hi, mechosa maisa. As opposed to when it comes to the person suffering from kodiakos, you have some kind of remedy that you need to do for him that we learned at the beginning of the perek. That you have to give him lean meat roasted on the coals and diluted wine. So it's not the same as a person who's sleeping. So the Gemara says, "V'Rish Lakish nami nidamu l'shoyter." Nu sataka. Why doesn't Rish Lakish compare him to a shoyter? Given that, and the answer is shoyter loy same biyodim. Because the difference is a shoyter, we have no cure available for him. Hi same biyodim. But when it comes to a person of kodiakos, then we have the remedy available to us, as we learned before: bisra sumka agumri v'chamra marka, lean meat roasted on the coals and diluted wine. So therefore, Rish Lakish says you can't really compare him to a shoyter where there's really no cure for him. Here, there's an easily available cure. So therefore, in that sense, he's more like a person sleeping. Agav, by the way, this point that we're saying over here that you can't do a get for a shoyter became a major controversy in halacha a few hundred years back. There's a famous case called the Get of Kliver. Kliver is a town someplace in nowadays I think it's in the Netherlands, whatever it is. Anyway, there was a yid from there, to make a very long story short, where after he was married, he started showing signs of insanity, signs of paranoia or something, and eventually his wife wanted a get. And a local basin over there executed a get for him, and then it became a huge machlokas among all the rabbonim of Europe of that time, whether this get is kosher or not. And it's called the famous case of the get of Cleves in English. You can look up the details. It had a lot of effects. Among them is that you actually have the Rabbonim of Frankfurt were almost the only ones who held that the get is kosher. Almost everybody else held that the get. Almost all the other Rabbonim all over Europe held that the get is posel. In fact, I have a distant relative of mine at the time was a dayan in Frankfurt, and afterwards he became the interim Rav of Frankfurt. His name is Rav Nosson Maz. He was one of the ones very strongly supporting the idea that this get is kosher, and he wrote a couple of chuvas on the subject. Different other rabbanim all over wrote chuvas on it. The upshot was, eventually the Rav of Frankfurt, Rav Abishol, his name was, passed away during that time, and they needed a new Rav. So my relative of Nosson Maz served as interim Rav, but they didn't want to appoint him as permanent Rav because in general they would get somebody from outside the city to be Rav. A prestigious community like Frankfurt shouldn't just have one of its native sons be the Rav. Anyway, they decided then that only a Rav who has never written against the get of Kliver should be our next Rav. And since most of the Rabbonim all over Europe had written against it, then most of them were disqualified. The upshot is the Baal Afla, who was a Rav in some town in Poland or the Ukraine at the time, he and his brother Rav Shmelka were Talmidim of the Mizrach HaMagid, but they were also prominent Rabbonim in communities in Europe. Reb Pinchas, the Baal Afla, planned to write a truva on it, but his inkwell turned over, and so he never bashkocha pratis. He never ended up writing the truva. So the Parnassim of Frankfurt decided that he's an acceptable candidate, and he eventually became the Rav and served there for 30 odd years, all as an outgrowth of the story of the Get of Kliva. The upshot is, the story goes, that eventually this husband recovered from his attacks of illness and paranoia and whatever. And the question became, now, is he still considered married to his wife or not? So they had him, they did another kiddushin, but he said, instead of saying the usual lashon hareyat mekudeshesli, he said hareyat adayin mekudeshesli. You're still mekudesh to me, following the opinions that the get was invalid and they were married the whole time. Right, just a little interesting tidbit, a little interesting byway of Jewish history. You can look up the details further if you want. Okay, getting back to the Gemara. So we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that a shoita, that this kudiyakus is similar to a shoita, and you can't write a get on his behalf while he's suffering from that. So the Gemara asks, "Me Omer Rabbi Yochanan Hachi? Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that?" Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Shmuel? Now, obviously, Rabbi Yochanan can disagree with Shmuel, but we don't find that he does. Shochat by Shnayim or Roiv Shnayim, if a person was shechted, as his neck was cut through both pipes, the windpipe and the esophagus, or Roiv Shnayim, or most of them, which is either way, that would be with an animal that would be a valid shechita. So now the person is still alive, but he's not going to live very much longer. And while he's in that condition, he can't talk anymore, but he makes a signal to show write a get for my wife, then they're able to write and they're able to deliver the get. Now, for sure, by the time, okay, when he's giving the instructions, then his mind is still clear. But by the time you finish writing the get and by the time you finish delivering it, obviously his mind is not going to be so clear anymore. I mean, he may even be dead by that point, but even if you manage to keep him alive long enough, his mind is certainly not going to be clear to be able to do it. And you still see that you can do it. Vitanya, and we learn in a Braisa similarly. So, okay, even if we can't ask from what Shmuel is saying on Rabbi Yochanan, but we find a Braisa that says something similar. Ra'uhu meguyod, if they saw a person was cut up into pieces, but he's still alive, or it's solo valatsliva, or they see he's on the gallows. They see he's on the gallows, or sliva could also mean that they crucified him, they nailed him to a cross or whatever. The Romas va'amakis will get leishti. And again, he signals, for example, with nodding or shaking his head, and that they should write a get for his wife. Then they're able to write the get, and they're able to give the get. So we see that even though the person is not in the clearest possible mind, nevertheless, the get is still valid. So why should it be different? And then why should it be different in this case? In fact, Tosfos says the question may not only be on Rabbi Yochanan. The question really may be on Rish Lakish as well. Rish Lakish is saying that it's fine with the guy with kudiyakus only because we have a remedy available to cure him. These cases of a person shochat by Roiv Shnayim or Meguyad or whatever, you don't have a remedy available for it. And still, the Braisa is saying that it's fine and you can write the get. So the Gemara answers back. Hochi hashta. How are you thinking of comparing the cases? Hossam daitet tzilosihi. There, he actually does have a clear mind. Okay, eventually, it's not going to become clear. But at least the person begins with a clear mind. Chishusihi daaschilabei. But weakness has already started in him because of what they did to him. So he doesn't have the ability to say it, but he has the ability still to nod and shake his head at appropriate times, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon. And therefore, so that's fine. You can still give a get when he's in that condition. But here with the person with kudiyakus, his mind is askew. His mind is all mixed up. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that that's similar to a shoita, and you can't give a get under such conditions. Okay, so the Gemara asks me, Omar Shmuel Hachi. Now, did Shmuel in fact say that? that was saying that if the person had both of his simanim cut, then he's still able, you can still deliver a get on his behalf because he's still alive. But if the person had his the two pipes or the majority of them cut through, and then he ran away. So on the face of it, maybe he survived. No, me'idin olav, they can still give edus that he's dead, that his wife could remarry because he's not going to live very long. So v'isak da'chayu, if you're going to tell me the guy is still considered alive, am I me'idin olav? Then how can they say edus on him? He's still considered alive. Maybe he managed to survive it. Well, they answered, no, chayu v'seif olamos. Sure, right now he's alive, but soon enough he's going to die, and no question about it. In other words, Tosfos points out that the question is that when we say Me'idin Olav, it makes it sound like we were saying Eidos that he already died. What we mean is Chayhu v'Seif Olamos. We mean by the time the Eidim come to Beis Din, and by the time Beis Din hears their Eidos, the guy is going to be dead. Therefore, they can say Eidos that he's dead. It's not that they're saying Eidos that he was already dead when they saw him, but rather that he's going to die very shortly by the time they finished judging the case. Okay. The Gemara asks, Elameata, well, by that logic, if you're telling me that if a person had his simonim, his windpipe, and his esophagus cut, then he's definitely going to die. Suppose somebody did that b'shogeg, yehei goyla al yodei. He should have to go into the orei miklat because of that, because any time a person kills b'shogeg, he runs away to the orei miklat. Suppose that you have a person did that b'shogeg. Say, for example, you have the example in the Pasuk where a person is chopping wood and something flies off and hits the guy, whether you have a machlokas and gemara and makas, whether it's the axe head that flies off or whether it's a piece of wood that flies off, whatever. Let's say it did that and it cut the two simonim in a person standing nearby. So based on what we're saying, that the person is definitely going to die from that, then it should mean that the person who was chopping the wood will have to go to the Ori Miklat. Alama Tanya, well, in that case, why do we learn in a Braisa? That no, even if a person shechted two simonim or the majority of them by somebody else, b'shogeg, he does not go into golus in the Ori Miklat. So how can Shmuel say that Shmuel is saying he's going to die right away? So Tosfos points out, now it doesn't have to be, for example, that when a person kills b'shogeg, it doesn't matter whether the person dies right away. Therefore, the Gemara is not really focusing on the fact that we said Chayhu was so for Lomos that eventually he's going to die. The question is just that Shmuel is saying it's inevitable he's going to die. Well, whether immediately or whether soon. Well, the question is in that case. So why is the Braisa saying that the person doesn't go to the Ori Miklat? So the answer is Ha Itmar Allah. You know that there was said regarding that Braisa, Omer Rav Hoshea Chayshin and Shema Haruach Bil Baltoi. We have to be concerned that the wind may have confused him. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if it hadn't been for the wind, if it hadn't been for the air that gets into the wound, he might not have died at all. Tosfos says that no, when a person kills b'mezid, then we certainly don't take that into consideration. But he would eventually die. But therefore Shmuel can say he will eventually die and we can be matu his wife to be married, but it might not be so immediate. There might be a significant delay where therefore we can say already that the person who cut those simonim is not the one exclusively responsible for his death. Inami or possibility, who kidavus misase? The person himself who was injured may have thrashed around and therefore made that now he's going to die sooner. So in other words, the person who cut his simonim is not, according to either of these answers, the one exclusively responsible for his death. He obviously is the one who triggered the whole chain of events, but there's other factors that come into play as well, and therefore you can't say that it was exclusively because of him. So the Gemara asks, my benai, what's the practical difference between these two answers? And the answer is ik benai b'shachti b'beisa d'shisha. One answer would be, what if the shechita took place inside a marble house? In various places in Shas, the idea is that a marble house is very airtight. So there's no ruach, there's no outside wind that could have come in to worsen his condition. So then in that case, then according to the first explanation of a ruach bilbalte, then that wouldn't apply and he would have to go into golus. According to the second explanation, he would. Now what happens if inside of there, after the guy had his simonim shechted, he thrashed around, then you could say, on the other hand, he made himself die sooner or more certainly than he otherwise would have. Inami b'shachti b'bara v'loy pirkus, or the other way around. It was outdoors, so there could be wind, but the guy did not thrash around, and so therefore, again, according to the first answer, you would say that the person would not be chayiv galus, and according to the second one, he would, because there was no pirkus. Interesting little story involving the Rambam. I think we talked about this at the end of Yuvamis as well. Because the Gemara is also there, the Rambam writes in a letter that one, we know, of course, that Rambam wrote Yad HaChazakah and generally doesn't give his sources. He gives the halacha generally without giving the source in the Gemara or wherever it is that he got the din from. So he tells a story about himself. One time he says one of the dayanim named Pinchas came to him with a copy of Mishneh Torah, and he points to this halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh, and he asks the Rambam, where did you get this halacha from? And the Rambam says, well, it's a halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach. It's probably in Sanhedrin or Makkos. That's mostly where these dinim are discussed. Rav Pinchas, the Dayan, says, I looked in those places. I didn't see it. The Rambam starts thinking. He thinks to himself. After a while, he says, I think it might be in a Gemara in Gittin. And he takes a Gemara Gittin off the shelf and starts looking through it, but he can't find it. We have it right here in the Gemara Gittin, but apparently the Rambam missed it when he was leafing through quickly. And so the Rambam says, I don't know where it is. So the Dayan leaves. Then, after the Dayan left, the Rambam chapzich, that actually you can find it at the end of Yuvamis. And he sent somebody to run and tell the Dayan that. So the Rambam writes in this letter, you know, I started thinking to myself, I mean, if even I don't know something like that, where halacha, so it's one thing, he says, a halacha that's in place. Let's say, for example, yeah, a halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh, that is in Sanhedrin or Makkos, where you would expect to find it, or a halacha in Hilchos Shabbos, where you would expect to find it in Masech to Shabbos, fine, I don't need to give sources for those, maybe. But let's say you have here a halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach or Shmiras Nefesh, which is in Yevamos or Gittin, where you would never expect to find it, or halacha and Shabbos that you find in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, or things like that, then Rambam thinks to himself, I should at least write an index of those halachas, of those out-of-place halachas, so at least people could find them. In the end, the Rambam didn't have the chance to write that index, but eventually, yeah, the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam spend taka a lot of space tracing the source of the Rambam's halachas, and back when the Rebbe started the whole thing of learning Rambam, then he had a couple of the Kollel of Younger Light put together a sefer of all the detailed sources of the Rambam, both the in place and out of place halachas, so that now it becomes possible to look at any halacha in the Rambam and find out where the Rambam got this particular halacha or this particular phrase from. Okay. So the Gemara continues. We said nishtatik. Now we said in the Mishnah that if the person became mute, and they asked him, should we write a get for your wife? And he nods his head. So we said in the Mishnah, we test him three times. And if he answers no and yes appropriately, then we can write the get, because then we know he's in his right mind. So the Gemara asks, how do we know that, what do you mean? We ask him three times things that the answer is no, or three times things that the answer is yes. Maybe he just has some kind of condition where he's always shaking his head to indicate no. Or maybe he has a sickness where he's constantly nodding his head for everything yes. So he's going to say everything yes. So everything that you ask him, anything where the answer is no, he's gonna shake his head no. But if you ask him something where the answer should be yes, you wouldn't know. If you're only asking him no questions or you're only asking him yes questions, how does that show anything? So Amar Rav Yosef Amar Yomi, Amar Rav Nachman, Damrin Le Besirugin means we have to say it alternately. So we ask him. So Besirugin actually doesn't mean alternately. It means Rashi says that we have to wait a while between one and the other. So we ask him a question. He nods, let's say, where the answer is supposed to be yes. He nods his head. Then we wait a while and we ask him the same question again. So that way, it won't just be that he's stop nodding his head, because they asked him different times, not one after the other. And then they do this the same thing the third time. So the Gemara continues. Still, isn't that a problem? Still, okay, so maybe what it is he has a condition where every so often he nods his head. How do you know then that, how do you know that helps us? And the answer is, in fact, the different explanation of sirugin is that we do it alternately. We alternate back and forth between yes and no. But still, how do you know? Maybe he's alternating. Maybe sometimes he's nodding and sometimes he's shaking. So the Gemara says we do it with less of a pattern. We ask him first one question where the answer is supposed to be no. Then we follow that up with two questions where the answer is yes. Then we wait a while. And again, we ask him two questions where the answer should be no and one where the answer should be yes. So the order is going to be no, yes, yes, no, no, yes. So now that's enough of there's a pattern to it, obviously, but it's not a pattern that you expect that a person is going to stand be nodding randomly. So if he nods or shakes his head correctly to all of them, then we know that he's in his right mind. The Gemara continues, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a different way of testing him. We ask him about summertime things. So we ask him about things that you would usually have during the summer, where now it's during the winter. We ask him, do you want this? And this way, this tells us whether he knows whether it's summer or winter. So Tosfos points out, we're not saying Rabbi Shmuel is saying don't use the no and yes method. He's giving an alternate method over here. He's saying the difference between whether it's summer or winter now is such an obvious one, you may not really need three times to ask him. With other kinds of things, you need to ask him multiple questions, whether it's yes or no. But Tosfos gives an example from the Yerushalmi with the yes and no questions. For example, we ask him, should we write a get for your wife? And we see if he nods yes. Then we ask him, should we write a get for your mother? And we expect that he'll shake his head. No, if he doesn't, then we know that he's not really in his right mind. And we ask him about other relatives of his. So we can use yes and no questions of that sort. But Rabbi Shmuel is saying that instead we can use out of season questions. So the Gemara asks, my name, what kind of out of season questions are you talking about? Are you saying that we're going to ask him whether he wants a coat or a blanket? Coats particularly being made out of wool, and blankets, Dini Rashi explains, being linen blankets. So do you mean that you ask him whether they should cover him with a coat in the winter or whether they should give him a linen blanket, which is cooler in the summer? Why? That doesn't prove that he's in his right mind or not. Could just be it's during the summertime, but right now he's feeling cold. Or right now it's during the wintertime, but he's feeling hot. So why should we unnecessarily consider him a shoyter, says Tosfos? Rather what it means is we test him as far as fruit. So we ask him about a certain kind of fruit that's not in season that time. And Rashi gives examples. Let's say you ask him during the wintertime, do you want cherries? And see what he says. And during the summertime, you ask him if he wants. Rashi uses a French word, nishpale, which means like little quinces. These are little fruits that grow during the wintertime only. So you ask him during the summertime if we should bring you some of those. Tosva says, no, it doesn't mean that, after all, you can have ones preserved or whatever. You ask him, do you want us to go pick you some cherries? Or do you want us to go pick you some quinces? And if he says, for example, during the wintertime, if he shakes his head, don't pick for me cherries, meaning that he knows it's wintertime and you won't find cherries on the trees, then it shows that he's in his right mind, and the same thing as far as anything else. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll discuss more about these dinim, about a mute person giving a get, and about, in general, about a mute person as far as various areas in halacha. To what extent do we consider him a pikeach, which is what we're talking about over here, where he's able to give instructions to give a get.